Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge, or more affectionately known, Jean Auge, and JC Jumbo Cheese Abbott. Boys, Hodge is about to make a road trip to a couple of stadiums he's never been to before. What should he do and what should he not do, do we think?
Well, I'll fill in our listeners. So I'm going to TD Place on Thursday for the Riders Red Blacks game, and I'm also going to BMO Field the following day for the rematch between the Stampeders and the Argonauts. So why don't we open it up to our listeners? If you're an Ottawa local, if you're a Toronto local, let me know what I should be doing. These are the only two East stadiums still on my bucket list. I've been to all the others. I've actually even been to Sky Dome for an Argos game. I've also seen the Argos play in Halifax. So it's kind of a crime that I've never seen them play in BMO. I've also seen them play at Mosaic Stadium in Regina for Grey Cup, and I've seen them play, obviously, multiple times at the Paw in Winnipeg. So this is like a really good opportunity for you to finally get the Argonauts home stadium checked off. So our listeners, let's open it up to them. What should I do? Send me a DM or send me a reply on Twitter. I'm happy to take your recommendations.
All I gotta say is you gotta hit up a beaver tail in Ottawa. That stuff is delicious. I know Dunk is probably, your skin's crawling right now at the thought of like fried dough covered
carbs
in
carbs and sugar. No!
Oh, no, right? But you got to do it at least once. Hit up the beaver tail.
I will definitely be hitting up the beaver tail. It will be worth the heartburn.
You got to go to the market in Ottawa and for sure to Liberty Village in Toronto and send all of your suggestions to at John D. Hodge on Twitter. I'm sure he'd love to hear them. Give him some travel tips for the city and our nation's capital and Toronto. Enjoy it, Hodge.
Yeah, I mean, I will. It's been 15 years since I've been in Ottawa. It's one of my favorite Canadian cities. Toronto, I'm in Toronto every year because my wife is from Toronto. But Toronto is also a city where you could do something different every day and never run out of things to do. So I'm still open to the recommendations.
All right, send them to Ja. Today, we're discussing Canadian quarterback Trey Ford leading Edmonton to the Elks' first win of the season. Imagine that, boys.
The CFL Command Center gone wrong.
Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke signing with the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, yeah. Heating it up in Hotlanta. The Calgary Stampeders donating tickets to Jasper wildfire victims.
Joey Chestnut setting a world record in Regina.
And Dan Campbell giving props to Canadian defensive lineman Matthew Betts. But first,
the Winnipeg Blue Bombers stunned the CFL world with a 25-0 victory over the BC Lions in Week 9, limiting the Leos and Vernon Adams Jr. to 4 first downs in just 102 offensive yards. The result was especially surprising given the Lions were coming off a bye week and the Bombers were on a short week. Hodge, was this the most shocking result you can remember in your time covering the CFL?
I think it is. Honestly, boys, this is a game that I think everybody was expecting to be a BC Lions win. I know all of us at Three Down Nation picked the Lions to win. And I, think
I don't make picks, so don't put me in that bunch.
Well, I'm just saying of the people who do, those who do picks at Three Down Nation did, everybody at CFL.ca picked the Lions to win this game. And, you know, Princess Auto Stadium is a tough place to play. Lions are still over a field goal favorites. Now, the fact that the Bombers won, I don't think is crazy shocking. It was a surprise. Again, I thought that this was going to be like a 13-point Lions win. But it's how they did it, right? The game story. If you had printed it off, if you could somehow hop in the DeLorean, go into the future, print off the game notes, right, with the stats and everything on there, hop back in the DeLorean to the past and show them to people a week ago and say, this is what's going to happen in Winnipeg, BC. This is what's going to happen. Vernon Adams Jr. is going to throw for next to nothing. BC, the high-flying number one ranked offense, is going to get 4 first downs, which is reportedly tied the franchise mark for fewest ever in a game. I've tried to confirm with the league. League-wide, if that tied the record, they've yet to get back to me on that. I know that in the CFL's official guidebook, they have all kinds of stats and figures for most first downs in a game. They don't for fewest, unfortunately. 102 yards. 102! That's even including the garbage time at the end of the game. I don't think anybody would have believed you. And I threw the question out on Twitter because obviously it's recency bias, right? This game just happened. So I threw it out on Twitter. I got like 50 to 100 replies from people saying, well, I think this game was the most shocking that game. To me, the only one that would be close is another recent game. Like some people were throwing out, well, the Ticats winning their one game in 2003. Well, a bad team winning a close game isn't that surprising. No disrespect to whoever was sending that. To me, the only game that I could think of that was close that I got back via mention was the 2023 East Final, right? Where the Toronto Argonauts lost to the Montreal Alouettes. The difference to me, though, wasn't that the Argonauts came out and played terribly. Chad Kelly played terribly, throwing the ball away, giving it away like it was a garage sale, right? That was, to me, the surprise of that game. It wasn't the Argos as a team playing terribly, which is what we saw here in Winnipeg. It was, in my opinion, the most shocking result of a game I've covered. It might be the most shocking result of a CFL game I've ever seen, whether it was as a fan or whether it was just watching on TV. The win wasn't super shocking, but the way it happened is almost beyond belief. And you got to give credit to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for getting it done. We sat here on this show last week and essentially dug their grave, or at least dug their chances of finishing top two in the West Division a grave. All of a sudden, with the Riders losing, the Lions not only losing, but VA getting hurt, which I know you're going to talk about, JC. All of a sudden, the Bombers hosting a playoff game doesn't seem impossible.
I do want to make one correction to your comments, Hodge. I thought you were mostly spot on, but you said this was a team playing terribly, and that's not exactly true because this was an offense playing terribly. That poor defense actually did an admirable job. They held Winnipeg to 6 field goals, including a 60-yarder, which under normal circumstances, if you're not Sergio Castillo, you don't expect the other team to make. Unfortunately, they were on the field for almost 42 minutes of this game. I don't know if I've ever seen a discrepancy in time of possession quite like that. It was like watching them get waterboarded in that second half, gassed, exhausted, just gasping for air throughout that entire second half of the game. They had nothing left in the tank, and still they put up a valiant effort against the Bombers' offense. They just couldn't get anything from the other side of the ball. I'm not sure if it was the most shocking result in CFL history, but it was certainly the most embarrassing loss in Lions history because they had nothing. Off a bye week, off a bad loss the week before a bye week, they offered nothing as a rebuttal. They were completely out of sync. and they couldn't adjust or change throughout the game to combat the things that Winnipeg was doing to them defensively. Full credit to that secondary that was amazing and the three-man pass rush, but this exposed the BC Lions offensive line, and I thought their receivers didn't do enough to separate themselves against what might be the best defensive backfield in the entire CFL right now. The big story going forward is going to be Vernon Adams Jr., though, and he was terrible in this game. I've been critical of him in the past. I've praised him when he's deserved praise. This is probably the worst game I've ever seen him play, but he was unable to finish it because he goes down with that right knee injury early in the fourth quarter. Now, the Lions are saying it's going to be week to week with this injury. They don't think it's season ending. There's word that he could be back before the end of this month. We've seen VA hurt his knee before. It happened last season. He's tweaked it in past seasons. It seems like he has a bit of a propensity for these sort of hyperextension injuries to that knee. So I do believe he will be back at some point. But the Lions situation is dire without him at quarterback. Because as bad as he was in this game, he's been brilliant the rest of the season. And his mobility covers up for a lot of their faults, specifically along that offensive line where they're simply not good enough. Now you're going to have Jake Delagala go behind center, stand there at 6'7", completely immobile, and get put under siege by whatever teams he has to face over the next couple of weeks. I think the Lions could be losing a few in a row here because of this game, and it's going to have major ramifications for the West Division standings going forward.
This looked easy for the Blue Bombers, guys, and I know Vernon Adams Jr. wasn't necessarily on point and had that injury too, but to me, this is what we're used to seeing from the Blue Bombers. And yes, you could argue maybe they should have had more touchdowns, but it seemed like the old Blue Bombers that we used to know over the last four seasons that dominate their opponent at home, that impose their will physically, especially on their home turf. And to me, I don't think you can say it's one of the most shocking results, at least since all of us have been covering the league, because it's a week 9 regular season game. Did we expect the Bombers to win? Probably not for a lot of people. But, you know, Hodge, you referenced last week, I don't think we expected necessarily the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to just roll over and die and not make the playoffs either. We knew that this team was going to have some sort of a response or a rebound, and they showed it in an emphatic way. Was it a lot to do with the Bombers in this win? Yes, but I also think part of it had to do with Vernon Adams Jr. just not playing well, as J.C. Abbott illustrated. I don't want to say too much more because I don't want to get that stern look or tone from Vernon Adams Jr. the next time I happen to be in a scrum or even see him in person. But I think this said more about the Blue Bombers than it did the BC Lions. I'll steal a line from you, Hodge. I think this was a burn the tape game for the BC Lions. And not that every team is entitled to one every season, but for a multitude of reasons, you know, an off day, whatever the cliche you want to lose, this just happens. And the guys on the other side get paid too. I think there was a lot of hype about the BC Lions, and I didn't necessarily buy into that to start the season. That said, they've been full value for it up for the most part until this point in Winnipeg.
It was the third most lopsided game in CFL history in time of possession since 1996. We don't have the figures from before 1996. The two games worse, BC had the ball for 43 minutes and 22 seconds in an October 2019 win over Toronto. Surprisingly, that game was very close, 18-17, the final score, Lions over Argos. The other game took place on July 1st, 2010, when Calgary, again, beat the Argonauts. That was a 30-16 victory for the Stamps at McMahon Stadium. You could argue it's the worst performance in CFL history by an offense, right? 0 points, that time of possession. They had, I think BC had 70 yards more than the fewest net offense that we've ever seen in a game. But I think a lot of those net offense performances that were so poor came in really, really bad weather games, or they came way back in the day at a time when offenses just simply didn't put up the kind of yardage that they generally do nowadays with the prolific passing that we now see. Of course, in the modern game. I do think, JC, you make a good point. With how much BC's defense was on the field, it was a solid performance for them. I was surprised they didn't get to Zach Collaros more. Winnipeg's offensive line was absolutely miserable in week number 8. Week 9, they've got Kendall Randolph making his first career start at right guard. And the offensive line held up okay. I think that's a bit of a red flag for the BC Lions. But the bigger red flag is, I think, is what you mentioned. BC's offensive line got absolutely killed by Winnipeg's defensive front. And I've said it on this show. I think Winnipeg's secondary is the best in the CFL. But I also think through the first 8 weeks of the season, no team struggled to get pressure with four more than the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And if that defensive line can now turn it up, I talked to Willie Jefferson about it postgame. I talked to Mike O'Shea asking about that postgame. You know, Taiwan Garbutt is not a player that I think a lot of CFL fans know about. He's only played 3 games this season. This was his third opposite Willie Jefferson. And when I asked Willie J after the game, I said, did playing alongside Taiwan Garbutt remind you at all of playing beside Jackson Jeffcoat all those years on the other bookend? He got this huge smile on his face and he was like, hey man, this is going to be good. Like, Taiwan plays differently than Jackson did. Jackson was Jackson, Ty is Ty, but it's going to be good. So clearly the Bombers are feeling bullish about their opportunity to get to the passer. I also think Celestin Haba could be back. He got moved from the 6th game to the 1 game this past week. There's a chance he does end up returning after the bye week. That would also be a boost to Winnipeg's pass rush, but I still can't get over this game. It still doesn't seem real. It feels like it took place in 2021 when the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were killing everybody in the CFL and shut out the BC Lions 45-0 at Princess Auto Stadium. But of course, the Lions were in a very different position than they were now with the number one offense in the league in 2024. I still can't believe that they got shut out. Unbelievable performance. And again, you got to give credit to the Bombers. And I'll say this quickly, too. We made such a big deal of short weeks. McLeod Bethel-Thompson is out here complaining about short weeks. Jason Moss is out here complaining about short weeks. I asked Adam Big Hill, a man who is 35 years old and has played almost 200 career CFL games. This man has about as much mileage as you can have in professional football. He also, by the way, this past week reached 50 career sacks. Kudos to Adam Big Hill on 50 career sacks. This was his quote regarding short weeks. Quote, at the end of the day, we love playing ball. If you're telling us after our last game, we've got to wait 5 more days to play, great. We get to play quicker than normal. What we've talked about with this group is whatever it takes, anytime, anywhere. If they tell us we're playing tomorrow, shoot, let's go grab our stuff. Let's go. It doesn't matter. Our mindset is that we want to be the grittiest team that can handle these situations. We're not looking for excuses. We're looking for opportunities to display our hard work and the amount of confidence we have in each other. Close quote. I don't know about you boys. I appreciate McLeod Bethel-Thompson speaking honestly. I appreciate Jason Moss speaking honestly. But if I was a player and I was going into a game with McLeod Bethel-Thompson or Adam Big Hill, I know which guy I'm picking.
Absolutely. I think I would pick Big Hill as well. To me, there are not a lot of players left around that could have played in that era back when they used to go on a road trip and play multiple times in the East in 1 week, like on 2 days rest. I think Adam Big Hill could still do it, as much as we
probably
suggested that maybe he's on the downturn of his career, and that's probably true. He's still one of the gutsiest, toughest guys that has ever come through the CFL, and a real throwback at that. Before we move on from this, I just want to raise one question for you guys. I mentioned Jake Dolagala will be at the reins here at least for a couple weeks. If you're the BC Lions, currently Dolagala, Chase Bryce, and VA are the only 3 quarterbacks on the roster. Last year, for a stretch when VA was hurt, they dressed him as the 3rd stringer, despite the fact that he was not healthy enough to actually put on pads. How long does he have to be out, or how dire does that situation have to be for you to explore other options at quarterback, whether it is free agents or potentially making a trade for a guy like Jeremiah Mazzoli in Ottawa? It's tough with one of these week-to-week injuries, but I know there's a lot of people out there discussing it. What's your guys' opinions on that?
I would say, first of all, we'd have to get inside the mind of Neil McAvoy and Rick Campbell, the co-general managers there. But from my own pure perspective, I would think, you know, even if it's just a couple or a few weeks, that you at least have to talk to some of the guys on your ready list from a free agent standpoint. And if it's going to be longer than that, perhaps you look at what it might cost to get a Jeremiah Masoli if it's going to be 5, 6, 7 games. There's really no telling with some of these injuries. You know, sometimes I'm going a bit of a tangent here in terms of reporting. I don't like putting injury timelines out there because it can change. There is no control over that. And I think that leads back into this conversation in terms of the BC Lions looking at the quarterback position, that it's probably better to have a guy in there who's ready to go in case this is a longer term injury. But there's not much out there by way of free agent quarterbacks who have a lot of experience in this league. The one that pops to mind for me that would fit, which Riders fans might think is funny because Jake Dillegal is already over there, could be a Mason Fine, because it seems like, you know, he's young enough and there's still some upside there. I don't think Taylor Cornelius deserves another opportunity in this league. That said, he was caught up in the Edmonton Elks mess, so perhaps that's another guy that they could look at. But those are really the only couple names that jump to mind for me.
I would like to see Taylor Cornelius get a shot with a competent offensive coordinator, something he's never had before. And obviously, if anybody can take a guy and turn him into something in this league right now, it is Jordan Maksimek, who, despite the unbelievably poor performance of his offense, I think still this past week, I think still has the resume that makes you go, wow, okay, this guy knows what he's doing when it comes to calling a game, designing an offense, and bringing along a quarterback in the CFL. That being said, to me, if it is just literally a couple of games for Vernon Adams Jr., I think you roll with who you got. And for me, it's an issue of pragmatism. If you make a deal for Jeremiah Masoli, which, by the way, Ottawa has no reason to make at this point, you're going to have to pony up if you want Jeremiah Masoli on that cheap contract he's under by virtue of the injuries he's had the last couple of years, then what happens if Vernon Adams Jr. comes back in 2 weeks? Do you cut Jake Dillegal? Do you risk putting Chase Brice down on the practice roster where another team could potentially nab him? The Lions reportedly like Chase Brice. He could be a future guy for them. So I don't think that for 2 games you make a move. If this was a 6-game injured list stint that we were talking about with VA, I think you do it, because by the time he's back, you could be out of the running for a home playoff spot. But if it's just 2 weeks, I think you let Jake Dillegal go out there, do his thing. If he embarrasses himself, then you can cut him and make a trade later on. If he does well, then you're solid. You don't need to make a deal anyway. So to me, that's short timeline for the practical reasons and the limitations of the roster. I don't think you make a move, but I think it's a great question, JC. And it's one that we know that Neil McAvoy, the team's de facto general manager, is thinking about right now.
Yeah, and I have it on good authority that the Lions are kicking the tires on quarterbacks right now, although they're undecided on whether or not they will bring somebody in. My opinion on it is it's better to act earlier than later. They've gone through this quarterback injury thing a couple of times now, back in 2022 and 2023. They've typically been a little late to react, I think, when it comes to bringing somebody in. I'd rather get it done right now. Mason Fine, to me, is a guy who will look really good in a quick-hitting Jordan Maksimek system. I think he'd be a nice addition and a better fit than Jake Dillegal, who has a longer release and really struggled in preseason.
I'll also say this before we go to the next topic. Kudos to the Lions for issuing a statement on Jeremiah Masoli, right? This game took place
Vernon
on
Adams
Thursday.
Jr. Vernon Adams Jr.
Pardon me, on Vernon Adams Jr. It would be highly inappropriate if they issued a statement on Jeremiah Masoli right
unless
now.
Unless they trade for him.
Pardon me. Unless they trade for him. But right now, it's not cool to issue public statements on players who don't play for you.
That'd be tampering.
But, that would be very much tampering, which, as we know, never happens in the Canadian Football League ever in a million years. Never, ever, ever. But I give them full credit for issuing a statement on VA, because this game took place on Thursday and fans in Vancouver and, of course, all across the Lower Mainland there in BC, I'm sure, were on pins and needles wondering what the heck is going on with VA. And this team doesn't practice until Tuesday, right? So why leave your fans in suspense for 5 days waiting to give an update? Just put out a statement, right? Ease the fans' hearts and minds and have it not be a story, right? Because had they not issued that statement, it would have been all over the broadcast from TSN for the next 3 days. People would have been speculating all over social media. because people speculate when you don't say the facts, right? When you try to hide things, people will guess. Well, there's no guesswork here. We know what the approximate timeline is for Vernon Adams Jr., and we, of course, wish him the very best in his recovery.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Canadian QB Trey Ford led the Edmonton Elks to a 42-31 upset win over the Saskatchewan Roughriders in Week 9, completing 18 of 22 pass attempts for 252 yards with two touchdowns and one interception. Javon Leak was the breakout star of the game as he rushed 12 times for 169 yards and three touchdowns, ripping apart what was the CFL's top-ranked rush defense. JC, how impressed were you with Edmonton's performance?
I was very impressed with how that offense looked. With just the tweak of the addition of Trey Ford, I thought it changed the entire structure of what they were against a very good Saskatchewan defense that has been the backbone of that team this year, coached, of course, by one of the league's best in Corey Mace. They made them look silly, and they absolutely eviscerated them in the run game. Now, the addition of Trey Ford, his ability to break outside the pocket or break contain for big runs, I think traditionally that affects how you defend the run and opens up some things in the middle, although I've had some smart football people tell me that may not have been totally at play on a couple of the big runs by Javon Leak in this game. I still think it has an impact, at least mentally, on what these defenders are thinking. But for Trey Ford, this was a game where he showed he could be a passer, a pocket passer, right? I was almost surprised.
Preach!
I was almost surprised with how little he tried to escape the pocket or create with his feet. He did have, I think, 46 yards rushing or something of that nature, which is impressive for a quarterback, but he hung in there. He made some tough throws. That dime on the 93-yard touchdown to Tevin Jones, well behind coverage, was a perfectly thrown ball where he's hanging in the pocket and stepping up through pressure. This was a huge game for him. And then with Javon Leak, it seems like a star-making moment to me. We already know what he can do on special teams as a returner. This felt a little bit like the first time we got to see Brandon Banks as a receiver in the Hamilton offense, where you're like, oh, he can do that elsewhere too. He's not just a return guy. And Javon Leak showed that if you give him 18 inches of daylight, as I believe the great Gale Sayers once said, he can break through for huge, huge plays. He was very impressive in this game.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders defense going into the game was averaging a minuscule 3.6 yards per carry on the ground. That's defensively, so they're stuffing the opposing run game. The Elks averaged 9.9 yards per carry in that game. And you know, I'm going to sound biased here. I know there's a lot of focus on Javon Leak, and don't get me wrong, he was great. But I would argue, and you guys can feel free to debate me, that if McLeod Bethel-Thompson was the quarterback, that would not have happened. Trey Ford opens up running lanes. It was so clear that the Saskatchewan Roughriders were game planning. I don't want to use some other words to describe it, so I'll go with game planning, to not allow Trey Ford to hurt them with his legs, even though he did so, especially early on, made Malik Scoop Carney look stupid. He took a terrible angle, and Trey Ford easily got outside to run for a first down. But I think that was a real key here, is what Trey Ford not only brings to this team from an energy standpoint, an athleticism standpoint, but how defenses are going to try to at least defend this Elks offense in the run game. We saw it in the last Elks win before this one, before the 11-game losing streak started, all the way back in September of 2023, when Kevin Brown rushed for, I believe it was in the 170-yard range against the Rough Riders defense. Different coordinator, it was Jason Shivers, but how Trey Ford affects and benefits the run game. I don't want to hear anymore about how this kid can't throw from the pocket, and I don't want to hear anymore about how McLeod Bethel-Thompson needed to come in for Trey Ford to look like this. He has clearly been focused, put in the work, dealt with all of this BS nonsense that's gone around him, including the coaching staff, some of which that are still there with him in Edmonton, lying about him multiple times on or off the record, and just appreciate this guy for who he is. Canadian, American, alien, whatever he is, a great quarterback, an entertaining one, and oh, by the way, a guy that will win you football games. He's proven this in the past under Chris Jones. Now he's doing it under interim head coach Jarius Jackson and interim general manager G. Roy Simon. Trey Ford is a dude. He's a legit number one quarterback in this league with upside. On the other side of it, to balance it out, does he still need to prove that he can do it week in and week out? Yes, he does. But Trey Ford always was the best option for the Edmonton Elks at quarterback going into the 2024 season. It's so apparent. It's so obvious. I'm sick now of the people in Edmonton who feel like they need to protect McLeod Bethel-Thompson. And this is nothing even to do with MBT, really. He just kind of got caught up in all of this when he got offered over $500,000 to come there to Edmonton. Trey Ford should have been the guy that they went with. And arguably, if he was the guy, yet again, for a second season in a row, we're talking about this. If they went with Trey Ford earlier, they could legitimately be in the playoff race. Perhaps if they go on a real heater here, they could get back in it. That seems far-fetched. But Trey Ford is legit. He showed his progression in that game against a defense that you could argue is among, if not the best unit in the league under Corey Mace.
It was a very impressive performance. And my question is, how do you defend this Elks offense from here on out, right? We saw the Riders constantly stacking the line of scrimmage, not necessarily the box, but the line of scrimmage for fear that Trey Ford would beat them laterally. And what happened was when they brought all those guys to the line of scrimmage, there was no second wave, right, to stop Javon Leak if that speedster who hit whatever it was, 33 point something ridiculous.
35.8.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, that's faster than you can drive in a school zone here in Manitoba. I don't know about the rest of the country. But the way in which Javon Leak was able to gash that defense, I think, means that opposing teams are going to look at that and go, okay, we can't afford to sacrifice our second level and move everybody up to the line of scrimmage. We're going to have to keep that second wave there to prevent these type of explosion runs. But then, of course, when you have your guys back on a second level, you run the risk of Trey Ford beating you laterally. And I'm really excited to see what this run game is going to look like when Kevin Brown does come back. Because if you've got Javon Leak in as your home run guy, Kevin Brown can come in as your hammer, so to speak, and be the power guy. And not to say Kevin Brown's not fast. I think he's also very fast, but he is more of a run through than run around type.
Yo, Justin Rankin has his hand up here saying, am I not a pound the ball type of guy? 10 carries for 60 yards, bro.
He was also very impressive. I don't think he's Kevin Brown, but sure. Regardless, the point is, Edmonton suddenly has the most vaunted running attack in the CFL. And they're doing it with an offensive line that I don't think was putting in a scare for anybody. Like, at this point of his career, Brett Boyko, like, he was out on the street. Shane Richards, former number one pick. The Argos tried to trade Shane Richards last year, and there were no takers, right? Nobody wanted Shane Richards. He's out there right guard. They're opening up giant holes. I mean, Mark Corte has always been very good. Don't get me wrong. Martez Ivy, I thought, had a very nice game at left tackle. So full credit to that unit there without Thomas Jack Curtala in the starting lineup right now. But they were good across the board. David Foucault had a couple of nice kind of box out blocks on some of those running plays. So credit to the offensive line. And we all know the best way to take pressure off your offensive line is to have a quarterback who runs 4-4. And that's exactly what Trey Ford did. All of a sudden, the offensive line's pass pro looked a lot better than it had at any point to start the season. By the way, I'll spoil it here. The Edmonton Elks will win our Most Outstanding Offensive Line Award this week. If you don't regularly check out our awards articles, please do. This was a sensational performance. And the only thing that would have been better is if, you're exactly right, Dunk, the Edmonton Elks hadn't waited this long, because they probably waited too long to pull the pin. And shockingly, right, like they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, trying to get a different result. That's actually not true. That's the Einsteinian definition of insanity. But regardless, the Elks have now tried the exact same strategy in two consecutive years, which is start a tall white guy a bunch of games and then go to Trey Ford later. And unfortunately, last year they waited too long. They probably did the same thing.
Kind of, sort of three, though.
We'll
see. Because Trey Ford started some games in his rookie year, and he won his first career start against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and that was a tall white guy at quarterback. A different one, though.
That's true.
Well, there was injury in there. Well, they went to Nick Arbuckle was the day one starter in Edmonton. He started three games. Nick Arbuckle is white. He's not very tall. They went to Trey Ford for game four. He won that. Game five, he got hurt, and the Elks got killed by the Calgary Stampeders to the tune of 49-6. Then Taylor Cornelius started the rest of the way. So I get what you're saying. I write off 2022 for the reason JC said. That was an injury, a shoulder injury that kept Trey Ford out for an extended period of time. But regardless, the Edmonton Elks made a ton of mistakes in 2023, learned literally nothing from them, and then made every mistake again in 2024, which is just not a sustainable model. Had they learned from the mistakes of last season, Chris Jones would be the head coach there right now, and they'd probably be 500 right in the thick of things in the West Division, looking to, dare I say, host a playoff game. Because right now, to be atop the West Division, you only need 5 wins. And those two teams at the top of the West Division in BC and Saskatchewan are without their starting quarterbacks. Like, this division is as open as it's been in probably 10 years. And the Edmonton Elks still didn't put themselves in a position to win it, which is really just too bad for the fans there. They deserve better.
Yeah. For the record, Hodge, I believe you misspoke. You said that was the Einsteinian definition of insanity.
Yes.
Actually, it's the Chris Jonesian definition of insanity. Yeah. Just wanted to set the record straight there. If you're the new owner in Edmonton, and there's going to be a new owner here in the coming weeks or months, your first meeting when you take over the team is not with G. Roy Simon. It's not going to be with Jarius Jackson. Neither of those two guys are going to be with you long term.
You never know. You never know.
You never know, but you know.
More so with G. Roy Simon.
I would say more so with Jarius Jackson. I don't buy him as a legitimate head coaching candidate. With all due respect to the
That's
guy
what
who
I mean.
Just got his...
G. Roy Simon could be there long term.
Oh, G. Roy Simon could be there long term. I'm not sure if I buy it long term, but the first person you should sit down with is Trey Ford, because as we talked about before, he is on an expiring contract and has been jerked around, messed with, lied to in that organization. There are bridges burned, and if you're the new owner, you've got to come in and say, hey, everyone who did that to you is gone, okay? I need you to stay. And it's not because Trey Ford is going to end up being necessarily the number one quarterback in the league, although I think he has the potential to get there one day. It's because he's the most exciting player, period, that you could bring in or have at your disposal as an organization. And if you're that new ownership group and you want to put butts in Commonwealth Stadium seats, you need to have Trey Ford committed long-term. In fact, I would want to get an extension done with him before the end of the season, before anything. I would want that to be my first act as owner, is say, hey, here's a new contract and here's some extra special marketing money too, just to show you how invested I am, because that is the deal that has to get done. Otherwise, all this excitement, all this re-energization, I don't even know if that's a word, it doesn't matter, because Trey Ford will walk at the end of the year. You need to mend that relationship.
I asked Corey Mace if Trey Ford was the most explosive quarterback that he's seen in his time playing pro football and coaching in pro football. And the two names that came to mind for him, Mike Vick and Doug Flutie. Now, he wasn't comparing them, but he was trying to remember if he went against Michael Vick during his playing days, and he talked about Doug Flutie as well. Different ways of doing it, he described when talking about Doug Flutie and Trey Ford, but that's the kind of guy he is. And ultimately for Trey Ford, he has to win football games, all right? It's all fun and great for us to talk about how exciting he is, and he definitely is that, but he has to continue winning football games. I believe he can do it. I think there's a lot of people out there who believe he can do it, but he's got to go out and prove it. Other than that, when you're talking about being in that kind of company, like, that's the type of athleticism this guy is. And on a great day, he'd run his 40 in the 4.3s, just like I believe Mike Vick ran. Mike Vick might have been in the 4.2s as well, but I don't want to necessarily compare him to Mike Vick, but that's the caliber of athlete, at least, that we're talking about. And, you know, I thought about this over the weekend because I was there at Mosaic Stadium live watching this in person. I got a chance to sit down with Trey Ford at Hotel Saskatchewan for a number of minutes, and I've known him decently well over the years, but just to see how he's conducting himself in this situation, he's not getting too high, he's not getting too low. And I started to think, you know what, every level of football, you know, going from when you're just starting as a toddler all the way up to the pros, you usually always want to have the best athlete at the quarterback position. Would I be right, fellas? Hodge, JC, yes, yes?
I'd advocate for playing them at right guard, but I think quarterback is a suitable spot.
That's why I was always a right guard. That's why I'm on the field, right?
Yeah, that they're a center. That's what I played. So
we must have different definitions of Beth Austin.
Quarterback makes sense too. I'll give you that.
So I'm thinking, how did the Edmonton Elks not put literally the best athlete, bar none, on their football team on the field? It just doesn't make any sense to me, because every other level, you know, usual football people, let's say, or parents who are coaching these minor league football teams would have the best athlete on the football field. But for, you know, a number of games last year, and we'll just mainly focus on this year, the first seven games this year, the best athlete, bar none, on the Edmonton Elks was by and large standing on the sideline. People want to say the cliche, holding the clipboard or what have you. Like, that to me, guys, is incomprehensible. The best athlete on your football team, when you're a large oafer, when you're rolling up these losses, is standing on the sideline. Like, I can't reiterate that enough. The best athlete that Chris Jones has, and Chris Jones likes to talk about going and finding these gems and these crazy athletes out of nowhere. The best one was standing right beside him on the sideline for seven games. That's why you're not a head coach anymore in this league, and that's why I don't think you should ever get a chance to be one in the future. All due respect to what you've done in the past. The best athlete was standing right beside you, and you couldn't notice that he shouldn't be on the football field.
It's like a romantic comedy. They were right there the whole time, and you just couldn't see it. But I will say quickly, and we should move on, but before we move on, I just want to reiterate, because I'm sure there's people rolling their eyes, listening to their podcast, going, oh, geez, here go the three down guys about Trey again. Every time I tweet about Trey, I get, Hodge, you're just a biased reporter, blah, blah, blah.
But you also get tons of interaction, right? Because people care.
Well, yeah, that's not why I do it. And for the record, I don't know what they really mean by you're a biased reporter. Like, I'm just stating facts about Trey Ford. And I want to reiterate that if Trey Ford goes out and throws five interceptions next week, then we're going to talk on this podcast about how terribly he played.
Yes, because the interception that he threw in the game, he should never have thrown into coverage. Yeah, we don't know the play call coverage, because there was two receivers in the area, which looked like that got messed up. But that was a bad throw, flat out.
Geno Lewis was calling for PI. I'm not sure. Should have been PI. I think he could make an argument for it. But I'd rather that the refs just let the guys play regardless. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show later on. But we will speak the facts about Trey Ford. The reality is most teams in the CFL have yet to put up over 40 points in a game this season. And the Elks did it on the road in one of the toughest places to play in the CFL against a top defense. So the Trey Ford haters can be quiet for a week. At least just be quiet. Just close your mouth and wait for your moment.
Enjoy the show. Just enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show. Just be happy.
Go out and look at the sun and smile and be happy that it happened. Yeah.
Exactly.
The BC grass that JC likes.
Whoa. Come on now. I don't know how I ended up getting associated with BC grass. Just because it
caused literally crazy takes. It sounds like you're stoned with some of these takes you bring to the Three Down Nation podcast. That's the only reason I say it, fellas.
Man, oh man, oh man. Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke signed a one-year
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, askmepeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
915,000 U.S. dollars contract with the Atlanta Falcons, who released... Oh boy. Okay, I'm going to take that from the top again. I apologize.
You're good, bro.
I'm not editing.
Keep going.
I'm not editing this out. I'm leaving
just
it in.
Just under $1 million USD contract. Continue.
There we go. Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke signed a 1-year contract worth just under $1 million US dollars with the Atlanta Falcons this week, who released undrafted rookie quarterback John Paddock to free up a roster spot. Rourke will compete with veteran Taylor Heinicke for the team's third-string spot behind 4-time Pro Bowler Kirk Cousins and first-round pick Michael Penix Jr. Dunk, is Atlanta an ideal landing spot for Rourke?
In life, fellas, when you're allowed to choose, you go where you're wanted, okay? Nathan Rourke could have gone to multiple other NFL teams, but the Atlanta Falcons clearly have had a love affair with this kid for a long time now. Tried to claim him when the New York Giants wasted his time by putting in a waiver claim. Okay, that was a complete waste of time. Thanks for wasting months of Nathan Rourke's life. He's too nice. He's not going to say it to you. But the Giants, you wasted his time, okay? You wasted it. Stop doing that. I do think that this is a solid landing spot, I'll call it, as much as I hate that word. But I'll give you my reasons why. Because the Falcons have wanted him. And Raheem Morris's comments about Rourke weren't quick. It seemed like he's high on their list, a guy that they've been looking at for a long time. It wasn't like Brian Daboll talking about, well, yeah, he did some good stuff in the CFL, and Bill Belichick saying one sentence about him. I know Belichick's not the head coach of New England anymore, but I digress. It seems like the Atlanta Falcons have wanted this guy for a long time. Can we make sense of what they're doing overall at the quarterback position? No, just like a lot of other NFL media types and even the insiders can't make sense of them giving Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed and then going and drafting Michael Penix high in the first round of the 2024 NFL draft. But you go where you want it. And I think that you look at this situation and it could, I stress could, be one that J.C. Abbott laid out on the podcast last week, where you have an entrenched veteran, you have a guy who you know is going to be your number two developing into the franchise starter down the road, ideally for the Falcons and Michael Penix Jr. And then you have a competent third string guy who's going to help the quarterback room and develop potentially into a trade piece or a guy that maybe you have to use if some type of rash of injuries occur at the quarterback position. He's going to have to legitimately beat out Heinicke, but if you look at our article on Rourke's signing with the Falcons and Heinicke's contract, the Falcons can actually save over $1 million by releasing Heinicke at the end of training camp. So I think if you're Nathan Rourke and his camp, you're looking at the Falcons situation and going, is the top end of the depth chart ideal? That can be debated. Just like we did on the podcast last week. But they clearly wanted us for a long time. They released a quarterback to bring us in. That speaks volumes because other teams haven't done that. Looking at you, the New York Giants, who wasted his time. Stop doing that, okay? Don't do that again. All right? It was disrespectful. But you can see how there's a path there for him to win the number three job and develop in the NFL, as JC talked about. So I'm giving you a lot of credit, JC, but I think it is a solid spot for work.
It's all that BC grass. That's why it makes so much sense.
Look, this is not a great landing spot for Nathan Rourke. I think that there's some credence to what JC said last week, and JC's going to get his chance to talk in a moment. We're going into a quality organization, which I think the Atlanta Falcons are kind of growing into after a few tough years, is okay. That being said, we know just given the money at stake here and the unbelievable commitment that the Falcons have made to Kirk Cousins, their one, and Michael Penix Jr., their two, that Nathan Rourke is at best the three, right? The criticism with Rourke going to Jacksonville last year was, oh, well, he's never beating out Trevor Lawrence. Like, the top he could really be on the depth chart is two. Well, now he's in a situation where the top he could be on the depth chart is three. Now, we know that Michael Penix has a history of knee injuries. We know that Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles injury. And at the end of the day, all this kid needs is a chance to go out there and play, preferably in the regular season, because as we know, preseason apparently means nothing. He also was set to make more money than he would have last season had he just stayed with the Jags all year. He also, because he accrued one season of experience last year being on an active roster for six or more games, is now eligible for what is called exclusive rights free agency, where after this year, if he makes the Falcons, stays with them all year, the Falcons can extend him a qualifying offer and keep him. After that, he becomes a restricted free agent. If he stays with the team in 25, then he can test unrestricted free agency, though, of course, that will all depend if he plays. So I think Nathan Rourke was smart to sign this deal. If he makes the third string job, he will make 1.2, 1.3-ish million Canadian if he's just on the roster all year, even if he doesn't play. That being said, the tough part here is that Taylor Heinicke is from Lawrenceville, Georgia. He went to high school in Georgia. He is a local guy there. He was with the team last season. He knows the offense. I'm not saying he's going to beat out Nathan Rourke. He is 31 years old. He's been around the NFL now for nine seasons. But at the end of the day, was Nathan Rourke smart to stay in the NFL and keep this dream alive versus rushing back up to Canada? The answer, I think, to that question is still yes. This is not an optimal landing spot for Nathan Rourke, in my opinion, but I do believe that at least right now, at the age of 26, this is the best spot for Nathan Rourke, with no other NFL opportunities maybe being presently available. You believe that there are, Dunk, or there were some readily available. Regardless, I think this is a better spot for him right now than the CFL, as much as I know CFL fans don't want to hear that.
I'm going to break the tie here, and I don't think it's the greatest number one landing spot for Nathan Rourke, but I do think it's a very good landing spot for Nathan Rourke for many of the reasons that Dunk laid out. I think there's a very good chance that Rourke can beat out Taylor Heinicke for that number three job for a couple of reasons. First of all, Heinicke renegotiated his contract this offseason in a way specifically designed to try and stick around with the Falcons because he knew it was so likely that he was going to get released with their current quarterback situation. He basically halved his cap hit in order to take more guaranteed money up front. That way he'd have insurance if he was released. So they'd be paying him just over $3 million if they cut him, just in the guaranteed portion of the money that was in the contract to begin with. It's a sunk cost, but they'd save about $1.2 million if they did release him. And frankly, from an organizational standpoint, you're not benefiting much from having Taylor Heinicke there. And that's with all due respect to him as a quarterback. I think he's a very competent backup. I think he's a guy who can spot start for you. But as your number three, that's not really a net benefit because you got Kirk Cousins, you got Michael Penix Jr. That third spot should really be a guy who's a flyer, somebody who you can develop, somebody like Nathan Rourke. And he's also somebody who's a lot more likely, if they decide to go the route of just two quarterbacks on the active roster, to be able to stick on your PR and survive waivers and stick with the team that way, which, of course, would hurt Nathan Rourke in the pocketbook, but would allow him to stay with Atlanta and develop in that organization. I think that has a factor to play in how much they like him. They see him as more of a developmental project. Taylor Heinicke is what he is and will always be that. But even with the two quarterbacks in front of him, and we all know the money they've given Kirk Cousins and the investment they made with that first-round pick on Michael Penix Jr., and I like both players, but is it really that different, if you think about it, guys, from San Francisco, where Brock Purdy was number three behind Jimmy Garoppolo, an established quarterback, and Trey Lance, a high first-round pick, right? Those are the two guys who had to mess up.
What are you saying here, JC?
No, I'm saying it's not an unprecedented situation, right? For one of those guys to get hurt and the other gun to mess up. And then all of a sudden,
You just happen to be the third guy there, the guy they like, the guy they pursue as a flyer, and all of a sudden you get on the field, and now you make the conversation a little bit difficult going into year two and year three of that first rounder's contract, where you impress maybe more than they did. It's not an impossible situation for Rourke, if he can get lucky and get on the field, to impress and earn himself a bigger role. But it's a good situation to get his foot in the door, like I laid in last week, at the bare minimum. So I like this spot. I would prefer if there was a little bit less of a established player in front of him at the number three spot, somebody a little bit easier to be out, perhaps like a one-on-one competition with somebody who's in year one or year two, another rookie perhaps. But of the options available, I think he's got a really good chance to stick with the Falcons.
And the Falcons in the offseason show that they have respect for the CFL. They signed Austin Mack. He got some guaranteed money in that deal and seems to be in a legitimate competition to make that
roster there.
DeAndre
Alford 2 years ago.
Great point. Right?
They've also given a ton of money to David Onyemata in free agency, who, while not a CFL guy, was a U Sports guy. Mm-hmm. So there does seem to be some institutional respect. But, and I give JC full credit, San Francisco, great example. The odds of that happening again, I feel like, are very low. But you never know. We could be easily sitting on this podcast 2 years from now, which by then Justin will have campaigned to rename the Nathan Rourke podcast, talking about how he's led them to yet another Super Bowl championship.
You know what I should have is just a Canadian quarterback podcast. Perhaps we'll do that.
That's
in the
what
future.
This is right now.
Yes, true.
Every couple weeks when Trey Forg and Nathan Rourke do something simultaneously, that is exactly what you have.
Fellas, let me just get one thing out real quick, okay? Atlanta Falcons, owner Arthur Blank, general manager Terry Fontenot, head coach Raheem Morris. Don't waste Nathan Rourke's time. The CFL Command Center failed to overturn a call from the officials during the Montreal Alouettes and Hamilton Tiger Cats Week 9 game. James Tuck, who initially was ruled down in the play, clearly fumbled the ball upon replay. And it was recovered almost immediately by the Owls. Instead of the call being overturned, it was somehow, I can't understand, upheld, citing Montreal's inability to immediately recover the fumble. Hodge, did the command center get it right? Or I should say, how wrong did the command center get the call?
This was bad. And I take no pleasure every week coming on this podcast and dissing the worst thing that the officials did.
Not every week. It's only been a couple weeks.
Well, it's been a couple, but they've all been recent because I think the CFL's officiating was really good for the first month or so of the season, and it's taken a bit of a nosedive. Fortunately, this play did not change the outcome of the game. And I will say, I thought the games outside of this one this past week were all officiated well. But first error was made by the official. When in doubt, let the play continue. Right, there's no need to blow what could very well have been a fumble dead immediately.
Nobody likes anything that's premature, just, okay?
No, exactly. Leave that to your imagination. There's no reason to prematurely blow the whistle. The second mistake was the command center not overturning this. And it's true that Wesley Sutton, who was the first defender to the ball, didn't secure it like right away. There was a little bit of a bobble. That being said, our Three Down Nation contributor based in Toronto, Ben Grant, put a timer on this thing and found that the Alouettes recovered within 2 seconds. 2 seconds is a pretty darn short amount of time, even in the context of a football play. This should have been an Alouettes ball. And if by the letter of the law, the command center in fact got it right, then we need to change the rule to say, hey, let's use some bloody common sense, because there was no Hamilton player anywhere close to the football after it was fumbled. There were two Alouettes defenders jockeying for it who did recover it, and again, did so essentially immediately. If the command center, in fact, did it right, that it's time to rewrite this rule and say, according to the opinion of the head official, the ball will be awarded to the team that was more likely to recover it, if, in fact, we get a short whistle, rather than simply did one of the teams recovered immediately? Because it's obvious to anybody with a functioning brain cell and who hasn't smoked a bunch of that BC Kush that Justin keeps talking about, that this would have been Montreal football. And Jason Moss, somebody who has gone ballistic and flown off the handle sometimes for some reasons where you kind of go, was that really warranted, that reaction? I think his very angry reaction to this was fully warranted. And again, it didn't cost his team. They still won handily. But we didn't know that at the time. This was still relatively early in the game. This was a rough play for the CFL. This stuff has to be cleaned up. It has to be improved, because inevitably it will affect the outcome of a game. And this stuff matters. It's important, right? These games are either important or they're not. I'm of the opinion it's important. It needs to be right.
I've watched a lot of football in my life. I've watched the NFL. I've watched the NCAA. I've watched U Sports. I've watched the ELF. I've watched the X League in Japan. I've watched Polish second division football, guys. And written.
What about the third division in Germany?
I have watched the occasional GFL 3 game, Dunk. Just not
good.
When you were.
Don't hate on the Starnberg Argonauts, okay? Give them some love.
It's the closest you ever got for to playing for the actual Argonauts. Was
I was going to say, why don't you introduce yourself as a former Argonaut? That it's not wrong.
No, I don't want to be that guy.
Anyway.
Fair enough.
My point being, I've watched a lot of football at a lot of different levels.
Settle good, this, JC.
This was the worst period call period ever. Exclamation point.
What?
That I have
ever,
seen
bro?
In my lifetime. I have never seen a more.
How high in the clouds are you right now? This? Ever? That was the worst call you've ever seen?
Not the most impactful. Not the most impactful.
I know, but you said worst call
the
ever.
Worst call ever. I have never seen a more egregious missed call than that one. It's true.
Wow.
It wasn't one that had the most consequences in the game. It wasn't the one, you know, when you're driving with 30 seconds left and it's a bad PI call. Those are all more impactful plays worthy of discussion. But in terms of the pure disparity between what was obvious to anyone watching and what the ultimate call was, there has never been one that I have seen that was worse than this one. And I think it goes all the way to the top, because I hate talking about the officials. I hate criticizing them. We've talked on this podcast about how difficult that job is and how we need more, better qualified officials from top to bottom in every sport in this country, but especially football. But that was a huge missed call on the sideline. And it was egregious that the command center would not award the ball to the Montreal Alouettes. In what world is that not an immediate recovery? I do not understand it. Yeah, there's a bobble. There's no tie cat within 20 yards. Who else is going to recover that football?
There's a world where it's not a recovery, and I'll tell you where it is. It's on Front Street in that little office that they call the CFL Command Center.
I would love TSN. I appreciate that we've got a static camera of the back of a bunch of dudes' heads while they're watching computer screens. Great. Absolutely riveting content. It's been a fantastic addition this season that has really amplified the broadcast, really helped my viewing experience to see all their bad parts and bald spots from the back.
Oh,
let's get
goodness,
some audio in there.
Throwing everybody under the bus. Bad
hey,
parts and bald spots.
Hey, jeez. There are several bad hairlines on this podcast, and I'm one of them. But
I don't have a hairline. My hairline is non-existent.
I have a great hairline. He got rid of it for no good reason, okay? I can't understand. I still won't understand, Hodge. You're wasting your hair's time, just like the Giants wasted Nathan York's time. You still had great coverage.
Well, the CFL command center wasting our time. And I don't want to hear on a mic what their explanation is for this call, because it was atrocious. And just the latest in a string of really, really bad command center reviews this season. We need more clarity there. We need better performance from the officials going forward, because this... A lot of times people throw around, oh, that was embarrassing for the league, how Bush League, yada, yada. And I think it's completely off base. This
was actually embarrassing because everyone from a 2-year-old to a 95-year-old grandmother could have watched that play and said, that's a fumble, and that's Montreal Alouette's ball. And somehow the CFL managed to get both of those things wrong twice.
You know how I feel about this, fellas. All the officials out there, I'll give you a big hug, and I'll say, you know what? It's going to be okay, because I'm not perfect. J.C. Abbott's not perfect. John Hodge, despite shaving his head, is not perfect. Okay? Y'all make mistakes. We understand this happens. We'll sing Kumbaya, learn from it, and move on. I feel like the officials just need a hug because they have taken an absolute beating from you two goons over the last couple weeks. Ain't nobody perfect, okay? I'm going to hug these CFL officials, tell them I love them, and I know they're going to be better in the future.
There is one more thing that I do want to touch on before we move on from that topic, because I saw a lot of commentary about it on social media, both criticizing us and criticizing in general when we posted this article. Andre Preux, the head referee in that game, is not responsible for this missed call. He was the photograph at the top of our article because I don't have a picture of the bald spots in the command center, and he happened to be the head referee in charge of that football game, so it was appropriate. But anyone who's blaming this on Andre Preux or making fun of his accent is completely off base, right? This is the sideline official's call on the fumble, and then the command center who messes it up. Preux doesn't get to see the video. He doesn't get to make that call from where he's positioned on the field. And generally, I think he is one of the better referees in the CFL year in and year out. He just happens to be a Francophone, and people, I think, unfairly criticize and make fun of him for that. I think it dates back, or it traces back to this country's long history of English-French relationships and how fraught that can
Let's not go down that road. But Andre Preux is an official who has been graded very highly for a number of years.
He's unfairly criticized Grey Cups, for whatever reason.
So I don't think he deserves the hate that he gets.
No, he does not. Not in the slightest.
It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2021, the CFL returned following a 620-day hiatus caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats 19-6 in front of 29,376 fans at IG Field, as it was then known. As Brady Oliveira ran for 126 yards, Kenny Lawler caught two touchdown passes from Zach Kolaris, and Jeremiah Masoli was intercepted twice. It wasn't nearly as exciting of a matchup as these two teams played 4 months later in the Grey Cup, but it still drew a television audience of almost 700,000 people as fans got the opportunity to turn into CFL football for the first time in almost two calendar years. Justin, what do you remember about this day?
It was a long time in the making, and I don't want to make it all about Three Down Nation, but when the pandemic happened and there was no football in that year in 2020, and even the wouldn't there be football in 2021, we were like, what do we do? You know, what are we going to cover on a day-to-day basis? So it just seemed like a long time, you know, for everybody kind of being in lockdown and not being able to do the things that we love to do. So, you know, I think about that day and where we are now, and it makes me think of how we should just be happy for what we have, the opportunity now where we can go out and do the things we want to do. You know, whatever your take is on coronavirus, I don't want to get into all the politics and the debates about that, but let's just be thankful for the things that we have in our life that all of us have that we should be grateful for every day.
Yeah, to me, it was just like a weight was lifted off my chest. CFL football is one of the most important, most treasured things to me in my life. It's something that has been a thread from the time I was a child, something that you enjoy with family, something that you build relationships over, and it's developed into a community, a vital community in my life through my time, both as a fan, online, and now writing about this league every day. And despite the fact that this game was not all that good from an aesthetic standpoint, and a lot of the games that followed it were of a similar ilk and not very good traditional CFL football games, I didn't really care at that moment because there was finally three down football back on the television. And we saw a glimpse of what it would be like to have that taken away from us. And by golly, I'm going to fight for it every chance I get from here on out, because that was scary to see how close it was to slipping away. And I was so grateful to have it back.
Yeah, I was covering this game, and it was, I think, the most surreal experience maybe that I've ever had. Like, just the atmosphere of being with almost 30,000 other people. Like, I was in the press box, but I did a lap around the concourse as well. And just the feeling of being physically close to other people was very odd. Hearing the roar of the crowd was very odd. It had been long enough that I'd kind of forgotten what that felt like. And I'll share this too. And I don't want to talk about the COVID pandemic necessarily, but this paints a picture for what it was like. After this game was done, I remember walking to my car. I was parked in the main parking lot at the Paw. I actually don't think I was supposed to be in that parking lot. I was in the wrong one, but they let me in. Shout out the security guard who did. Anyway, I get to my vehicle, and I got a new vehicle in 2020 during the summer. My previous one crapped out. So I get in my car, and it's time to drive home, and I realize that my lights aren't on, my headlights. And I'm like, okay, time to turn these bad boys on. I don't own this vehicle for 13 months at this point. And I realized that I did not know how to turn the headlights on. And that's because in the 13 months I'd owned the vehicle, I hadn't driven anywhere after dark. Because when all you do is sit at home every day, which is what we did and we're told to do, you don't need your headlights. And that was the first time I'd driven somewhere after dark. Fortunately, I did find my headlights. I didn't have to drive blind all the way home. That was good. But it's not an experience that I ever want to repeat. I want to go out after dark and cover CFL football games, among other things. And it was so wonderful to have the league back. This game was not good. Like, it was not clean. It was very sloppy, but none of that mattered. It was a game. It happened. The season got better from there. And like JC, like Justin, I'm very appreciative that it did. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
The Toronto Argonauts moved two-time CFL All-Star linebacker Wynton McManus to the 6-game injured list. How big of a loss is McManus for the Argos?
It's a big loss. McManus, I think, is a top 10 player in the CFL, though I think his departure from the lineup is mitigated by the team getting Folarin Orimolade back at defensive end. So I don't think it's necessarily a net loss for the Argos, but surely they're looking forward to having both guys in there at some point. The Calgary Stampeders donated 1,200 tickets for Sunday's game to those displaced by the Jasper wildfires. Was that a nice gesture?
Look, there's probably a joke in here about taking a bunch of people displaced by a disaster and throwing them in McMahon Stadium, but this was a fantastic move by the Stampeders organization, so I'll keep that joke to myself, because when you've got people in a desperate situation, they don't know where they're going to turn, they don't know what they have left at home, to be able to give them a moment of levity, something to enjoy, and a hell of an end to that football game as well, to send them home or send them back to wherever they're staying happy, I think that does wonders to the psyche, to the morale of those people. And our thoughts are with everyone who is suffering both from Jasper and wildfires throughout this continent. Homegrown defensive lineman Nick Dealey retired from the CFL despite dressing for 5 games with the Saskatchewan Roughriders this season. Why did he decide to hang him up, Duncan?
This one didn't make sense to me, and it's Nick Dealey, by the way, but my radar's up because it didn't really necessarily feel right. Dealey, said Nick Dealey. But anyways, Nick Dealey. And I don't really understand how this came to be. So if I get any more insight, of course, it'll be on freedownation.com. Legendary competitive eater Joey Chestnut set a world record at Regina's Queen City Exhibition, eating, count them, 343 mini donuts in under 4 minutes. Hodge, How many mini donuts could you eat in less than 4 minutes? That's the key here.
Wait, 4 minutes? I thought it was eight minutes. Yeah, I thought it was 8 minutes. But regardless, certainly less than 343. I'd give it a try, but I don't know. Maybe JC could give it a try with some of that BC Kush. I hear that that helps you eat mini donuts.
For the record, I have never indulged in the BC Kush, but my real question is, Hodge and I, tag teaming, do we get more than the 98 donuts that AJ Ouellette, Jamarcus Hardrick, and Anthony Lanier were able to down in that time period?
I think probably because your form is better. Their form was not good. I don't know if they've never watched competitive eating. It was awful. Yeah, you guys could be.
What was it like? Can you describe it for us really quick?
It's hard to describe. You got to go watch a video.
Okay. And by the way, a mini donut, so he doesn't actually know what the
right
entails.
And just for the record, the reason we tease JC about the Kush is because he is one of the most straight-laced people ever, and that's why it's funny.
Yeah.
Former CFL All-Star Waddell Smith, who won 5 straight Grey Cups with the Edmonton Elks, passed away at the age of 70 this past week. How will you remember him?
I'll remember him as a 5-time Grey Cup champion and somebody who deserves, I think, a mention in the discussion of the Hall of Very Good, if that's a thing in the CFL. It's more of a discussion south of the border. But you're talking about a guy who existed in the same era as a lot of great receivers. George McGowan for the first 2 years of his career. Brian Kelly and Tommy Scott were on that team for the rest of it. And he was still putting up numbers, over 5,000 career receiving yards in 7 seasons. In 1979, I believe it was the West Division nominee for most outstanding player. Had 13 receiving touchdowns for that team in that season. So certainly an excellent player who got overshadowed by the bigger Hall of Fame names in his era. But the Elks of that ilk would not be the same without Waddell Smith. The Saskatchewan Roughriders guest starred on The Amazing Race Canada. Justin, how well do you think you do on The Amazing Race? And who are you picking as your partner, me or Hodge?
With all due respect to both of you, I wouldn't pick either of you because you wouldn't be able to keep up. I do think, actually, Hodge would have some merit because he is so organized that would really
That's
help.
True.
But he wouldn't be able to keep up, so I'd have to, you know, decide on that. I actually think that I would do pretty well in the race, but you've got to have someone that you work super well with. So, you know, actually you posing that question, JC, I think makes some sense because I feel like the three of us do work very well together. But I guess for this purpose, if I had to pick one, it would be Hodge because I feel like directionally he would be really good. I think puzzles he would absolutely crush. Sorry, it's just
hey,
facts,
I would
bro.
Eat like
you
all the pig
question.
Brains and stuff. All the pig brains and stuff that they make you eat for certain challenges.
Wait, what?
Or...
I've never seen The Amazing Race. There's pig brains?
When they went through Regina, you had to sort through an oat truck. So an 18-wheeler filled with oats for a little waffle. And then you lined up in order of finding that for when you were going to get breakfast first at Hotel Saskatchewan. Everybody thought that was going to be a great breakfast. I've had breakfast there many times. It's amazing. But no, Hodge, you had to choose between pig brain or bison testicle, which I guess they call a prairie oyster, to eat they for do. Breakfast before you moved on to the football portion at Mosaic Stadium. So yeah, what would you guys choose? I would take pig brain, Hodge.
I choose to stay home. You can go with JC.
Bro, come on. I'm picking you to come on The Amazing Race. You're going to stay home?
See, I told you. I'm the best.
That sounds awful.
I would eat the pig brain.
Plug your nose and you can't even smell it.
You did grow up on a farm, so you probably have a stronger stomach than
me
in
that regard.
I've
seen pig brain before. Before it was cooked.
I guess I would do it. I don't know. I again, I'm not a good barometer because I've never seen The Amazing Race. If you do have to do a lot of running, admittedly, we're probably in trouble. I will say this, though, and I appreciate the credit on the organization. I am very organized. You said I'm probably good at directions. I will say this. I am completely 100% directionally challenged. I am awful with directions. So in that regard, you'd probably be better off than with JC. But then again, his cush problem is going to get in the way of you getting to your events on time, since he is so addled with the drugs. So that that would be a big issue to overcome. And yes, that was a joke. Please do not suggest that JC is on drugs. That was a joke.
JC, pig brain or prairie oyster?
I gotta go with pig brain. I'll eat just about anything, but I just can't get over the prairie oyster thing. That's the one thing I won't touch.
You know,
why's it gotta be so nasty? Why not go with the beaver tail or something?
On second thought, JC's been in a lot of countries, and he did up with me winding through the streets of Halifax. Hodge immediately wanted to take Ubers. He just really wasn't having much as walking.
It was 40 degrees.
And now the truth comes out because Hodge told me the hills weren't a big issue for him. So you're just
the hills weren't. The hills weren't. But it was like, hey, so we need to be there in an hour. It's a 75-minute walk.
40-minute
and it's 40
walk.
Degrees.
It's a 40-minute walk.
Or it was a 40-minute walk, which we did once to, I forget what, but it was the university. That's where we were going one day. We were going to the university. It was a 75-minute walk. We had to be there in an hour, and it was 40 degrees. And Justin's like, we can walk it. I'm like, what? Literally, what?
Faster than the Google Map time, bro.
Yeah, and then we could get there disgustingly covered in sweat. Lo and behold, we got to the university. They didn't have air conditioning anyway. So I'm extra happy we didn't walk. Plus, Dunk wanted to stop for prairie oysters on the way. I didn't know. I didn't tell
prairie
him what it was.
On the East Coast, bro? What are you talking about?
Yeah,
I don't
actual
think they
oysters.
Keep very well.
No, they have actual oysters, which is why on the prairies we have to settle for prairie oysters, I guess. Oh, jeez. Okay, but I'm just saying this. I was half interested to tune into The Amazing Race after our news article. I'm no longer interested. This eating nasty stuff. Just travel. Why do you got to eat nasty stuff?
It's a race, bro. They're going to push.
You can do that without eating nasty stuff. It's gross. It's gross.
It would not last very long, Hodge.
Okay, I changed my pick. I would take JC. Not interested. JC, you and I should apply for the next Amazing Race Canada.
Woohoo! I got to get in shape first. I got to start jogging or something.
I believe in you, kid. Let's do it. Running back Dedrick Mills has stepped away from the Calgary Stampeders due to personal reasons. Is that a key loss for the team?
I think it is. I mean, Dedrick Mills is a very good player. That being said, I've always been very high on Peyton Logan, who I thought did a very nice job for the Stampeders in a starting role. We wish the best to Dedrick Mills with whatever he is facing here off the field. Hopefully we see him back in the CFL at some point with the Calgary Stampeders. The organizers of the annual Spirit of Edmonton have warned the team's financial crisis could kill the event before the 2025 Grey Cup. Would that be a major loss?
It would be a huge, huge loss. Anyone who's been to a Grey Cup festival knows that Spirit of Edmonton is a huge part of that event. It's a go-to destination many years for people. Usually it's separate from the rest of the parties. It becomes a place that, you know, y'all pile in the taxi or the Uber to go to because it is such an important part of that tradition, along with their breakfast and the sluice juice. It would be truly tragic if we didn't have that beyond this year in Vancouver. The Ottawa Redblacks have released veteran defensive back Sherrod Baltimore. Is that an impactful loss for them?
On the field, with all due respect, I don't think so. But off the field, he's been a really well-known player in that community and done a lot there in Ottawa. So I think, yes, off the field, the impact will be felt, though he can continue doing it whether he's with the Red Blacks or not. Detroit Lions head coach Motor City Dan Campbell said Canadian defensive lineman Matthew Betts has made a ton of improvement since training camp started. Is that a positive sign for Mr. Betts?
It is, and Campbell said that Betts has actually started playing a lot of strong side linebacker, which is interesting. Like, to me, I figured the Lions were bringing Betts in as kind of like a race car, you know, like typical third and long type of pass rusher who could line up at a few different spots. But if they're working him in at strong side linebacker, that must mean he's potentially cooking on even first or second down. So I think that's very positive. Hopefully for Betts, he's able to pick up that spot effectively. Last one, the CFL clocked Javon Leak at 35.8 kilometers per hour during his early fourth quarter touchdown run on Saturday, which is faster than any NFL player ran last season. Do you think that time is legit?
If true, it's a truly stunning time from Leak, who only ran a 4.65 at the NFL Combine back in 2020. He was not viewed as an elite speed guy coming out, but clearly has that gear as a returner and as a runner. Is it exactly 35.8 kilometers per hour? I am slightly skeptical, only because at this stage, anything that's powered by Genius Sports gets a grain of salt in my eyes, because we know what they've done with regular stats in the past. I'm not entirely sure they can be relied upon for advanced stats at this stage, if they couldn't even manage to record how many sacks or tackles a guy had in a game.
I have some questions if Genius Sports is involved. That said, Genius Sports has done some things in other sports that aren't Canadian football that have done really well. So I hope it's right. I really, really do. I want to, because it is a crazy number. And Javon Leak, despite that 40 time, you know, I think has legit game speed, and I think we saw that on that touchdown run, but that is a wild number. Eye-popping kind of speed to see put up in a football game.
That speed is the speed I would run away from those pig brains and prairie oysters.
Down a hill.
Not interested. Down a hill with a rocket booster on my back, maybe. On that note, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Please check your feed later on this week for picks with JC and myself. And of course, next week for all of our reaction to week 10 in the CFL. I'll see you in Ottawa and Toronto. Enjoy the games, folks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.